Welcome to this episode of Wildcast. I'm your host, Matt Blymeyer. Our guest today is a Muncie native, a Missicordia graduate, a Wilkes assistant coach prior to being the head men's soccer coach at Penn College for the last 10 years. We'd like to welcome in head men's soccer coach, Tyler Mensch. Coach Mensch, thanks for joining us today.
I appreciate it, Matt. Thank you for having me on.
So we have a few segments. Our first segment is going to be your journey. So tell us what inspired you to become a coach. When did you know you wanted to become a coach?
That's a really good question. In college, sport management major, thought I'd work pro sports, being like marketing, sales, ticket sales. At Misericordia, we had good opportunities at the Yankees to go and possibly work there. But being from Williamsport, wanted to kind of be home, not in a big city type of thing. So ended up coming back home, working at Dick's Sporting Goods at the mall, which now no longer exists. And I got a random text from my roommate in college saying, hey, like his best friend that he worked with was finishing up at Wilkes, getting his master's, was coaching. Why don't you look into it? I never thought I'd be a coach, and took a phone call with the guy that was there, Mike Pryor. So I actually got to thank him. And he said, hey, great opportunity. You can get your master's, MBA, coach for 2 years, and went up, interviewed, and I was hooked. Just wanted to get into coaching.
I think some people don't realize the grind, especially back then. I don't know as much now. The grind it takes in pursuit to be a head coach. You had to go back and get a GA. So you were also working for their sports information department, right? When you were at Wilkes, and you had side jobs, side hustles, because you really can't make a living per se early on. How much of that grind do you appreciate now, and how much of that helps you to move to this position and probably honestly appreciate where you're at now?
Yeah, it was tough. I worked at a hospital because the position was basically just full tuition, no housing, a no meal plan, a small stipend, but the stipend barely paid like 3 or 4 months rent. So I worked at a hospital. I did medical records for the 2 years I was there. So it would be 6 in the morning, leave at 2 or 3, depending on if we had a game or training. Usually I'd go to the coach's office about 3 o'clock. We'd sit, look over the practice plan for about 45 minutes, and we'd end up going to practice from 4 to 6, and then I'd have to go to night class, 6 to 8:30. So I did that 3 days a week. It was a lot. It was tough. After that, like, it made me appreciate when I got the job here, like, it's worth the grind. You know, we didn't have an assistant here at the time, so I'm doing all the recruiting. I was just kind of used to doing a lot, no sleep. Yeah, just kind of always being me.
Now you're a father too, so you're still grinding with no sleep. So it's kind of full circle for you. You applied for the job here 10 years ago. What about this position intrigued you? We were in our provisional year of NCAA membership. We had a coach that had left, a head coach that had left, and we had opened that position after the season. And talk to us about what the reasons that you wanted to apply for this job and kind of that process. Was that your first head coaching interview process you had gone through, and just how was that experience for you?
Yeah, so John McNichol was the women's coach here at the time. He'd been at Kings. We played against each other. He was an assistant at Kings. And then when I was at Wilkes, we would go back and forth, knew each other. He was here and he said, hey, like, great opportunity for like a startup program. I was an assistant technically 4 years at Wilkes, 2 as a grad assistant, and then I stayed 2 to do the SID work on the side. I was like, you know, this is a good opportunity to maybe get my feet wet. Didn't really have a formal interview any other place. This was the first job that I had applied to for a head coaching job. So it was kind of get the experience, see what it's like. And then everything just kind of worked out. Like, I got on campus from being here. It was like, all right, what's Penn College about? Like, I saw it as a senior in high school and, you know, what the degrees were and the majors and the buildings. Like, everything was just beautiful when I got here in 2015. And it was like, I just liked the people like on the interview. Like, everybody seemed really down to earth, friendly.
Oh, thank you.
You ask good questions, all that kind of stuff. Just felt like very family oriented, which is what I wanted as a new like head coach. You know, Scott Kennel, being the athletic director, had coaching experience at Lyco. So it was like, could go to him if I had any tough questions or any concerns. So just felt very supportive.
We know John McNichol's going to be listening to this. So just remind all of us, in college, you had played at Miss, him at Kings. You were a forward. He was a goalie. How many goals did you score against him in college?
I scored 2 goals.
Yeah, you did. Remember that, John.
And he tries to say he had the best save against me. I don't recall it. So yeah, it didn't happen.
No. Agree. What were some of the biggest challenges you faced early on? Especially, you had mentioned some of it, no assistant coach at the time. We were still building as an athletics department, just finishing our first provisional year at NCAA. So you automatically come into a situation where there's probably not all of the support systems and facilities and all of those things in place that you were probably used to at Miz or at Wilkes. So talk to us about that process, trying to just figure out how to do this job with some of the things that are standard at other institutions that we had not yet gotten around to doing yet at Penn College. And then on top of that, just, you know, figuring out how to be a head coach for the first time.
Yeah. So honestly, the biggest challenge was I was the fourth coach in 4 years for the senior group. They had had a coach come and go every single year. And that's insane. Like, that doesn't never happens. So for somebody that had been Division III at Misericordia as a player, respected my coach, loved my coach, Coach Edkins, and then at Wilkes with an established program where a coach was there 32 years in total, to come into a place where I was the fourth coach, they didn't want to listen to me. They didn't care what I was trying to do. They were kind of thinking it was a joke of a program. It was kind of like intramurals to them. I came in and tried to set the tone right away of, we're going to run this like a Division III program that I played at and that I coached at, and set rules. And a lot of guys didn't buy into them. Lost a lot of talented players because they didn't want to follow a few simple rules. They kind of, you know, it was, let's show up, let's just play soccer, let's not train. If we do train, we're going to only go 50%, like not going to put the full effort in. And so that was the hardest part, was getting these guys that had been there for 3 years to buy into me. Looking back now, we've had two alumni matches and guys have come back from that group and been like, we're sorry. We're kind of like jerks to you. We appreciate, we know what you were trying to do. You know, 10 years later, they're seeing success. And so it kind of has come full circle. Facilities wise, yeah, it was tough. We had a grass field that everybody wants to play on grass. If you have a great Bermuda grass field, that's what soccer players want to play on. Central PA, you have the weather. You never, and then, you know, rainy season in the fall where we're playing with no practice facility. It was tough. It was a lot. Like, how do we keep this field safe for all of our athletes with women's soccer, men's soccer? I think club lacrosse was going on, you know, trying to balance the field. How do we train in certain spots of the field to not ruin it? But then you can't have a full practice plan, which was always interesting. And then at one point we were practicing on the front lawn with gas generators. So that was quite the experience for me. I commend those guys that put up with that and did that. And we're dealing with what we had. We made the most of it. Locker room facilities never were a big challenge for me. With our majors, guys are, you know, they're hardworking, they're blue collar. So they just show up, they do their job. So they go to class, come right to the field, change, be ready to go. So locker rooms weren't a huge issue for us. The biggest thing was just, like I said, the culture, getting guys to buy in. And then honestly, we had 15 guys that were on the team. It was like, how do we practice plan for 15 guys to try to keep them healthy? We have 20 games in the regular season, practice 6 days out of 7 of the week. So, you know, some guys, like I said, it was a hobby.
Yeah. Yeah. That was going to probably be a follow-up question. For those listening, prior to going NCAA and having full-time coaches, our teams were basically filled with students that came here first and wanted to play sports second because they weren't recruited. They were essentially what we would call walk-ons. They were coming to Penn College regardless, not because of athletics. Now with full-time coaches, they're going out actively recruiting. Students are coming here because of athletics, 1A, 1B, and academic. So it's a different student. It's similar, like you said, someone that it's their hobby or their passion. So a lot of the earlier stuff, it was more of a hobby than a passion. So what year did that culture switch? Because you would have had probably two or three classes in at that point, and you were targeting certain students, certain prospective student athletes that would fit what you wanted.
I would say it was probably 2017. So I got hired in May of 2015. The recruiting class for that year was pretty much done. I'll be honest, I wasn't left with a recruiting database. It's kind of, there was no names. No names for that 2015 class, no names for the 2016 class that you know, there we would have had contact with some guys that would have been looking in the future. So honestly, it was probably 2017 when I started to notice a change. I started with recruiting, just going to all the big showcases. I go to Jeff Cup, Potomac, Bethesda, PA Classics. Like the big thing for me was just got to get the name out there. A lot of kids were like, hey, you're going through the transition. What's it like? Because can't compete for an NCAA bid at the time because we weren't full-fledged members yet until 2017. So, yeah, I think it was that year, 2017, I kind of had an understanding of the school, what type of majors the soccer guys were sort of gravitating to. To be honest, a lot of soccer players just want business, sport management. They just want to play soccer. We have a great business program here, but wasn't getting those type of kids. So I had to kind of branch out and learn about construction management, HVAC, welding. And once I started to get some of those guys in is when the program, I felt, really took a turn for the better. So that was like that 2017 timeframe.
And 10 years as a head coach and 12 or 13 total coaching, what has changed in the last decade of coaching? How has your job changed? Not only because maybe technology has made some stuff more convenient, but certainly a student athlete that we're getting is the student, and this is every generation, is a little bit different. They have immediate contact with you now with cell phones. Different. It's probably a different student that you're coaching now than maybe you started with, and certainly that you were when you were in college. Talk about that, the changing of the student that we're getting, how you have to adapt your coaching to fit today's generation and future generations, because it's not going to just stop with, you know, these traits that this generation has isn't going to end with, it's not going to be like this forever. There's going to be new traits that you have to adapt to. How is that changing? How do you adapt to that?
As a player, I was super hardworking. We didn't have cell phones and all the Instagram and stuff that you have today. So I just prided myself on how I played, ran through the ball, was always challenging on tackles, was hard-nosed. My coach was hard-nosed in college. When I got to Wilkes, it was a little bit different. Coach Winger was a little bit more laid back, kind of like a player's coach. Not that Coach Atkins wasn't, but he was tough love. So then for me, it was kind of, I had a balance. I had a tough love coach. I had the player's coach. I actually did my thesis on different coaching styles and the success of those coaches. So I kind of took a blend. And today I would say I'm kind of like a player's coach, adapting to the times, like Instagram, social media, guys DMing me, videos. That didn't happen 10 years ago. Now I'm scrolling through our Instagram page and it's like, oh, I got a message I got to go look at. And here's a video of a kid. So, you know, I think the kids today, they want a chance. They want an opportunity. I still think there's a lot of good blue collar soccer players out there that want the tough coaching, want the hard love. But I got to adapt to every kid. Like there's certain kids I can, on the field, I can just say, hey, you got to do this better. Like, yell it out to them. But then there's a couple guys, hey, they want, come off the sideline, let's have a quick chat. So I'm always adapting, like, individually based how I want to approach coaching.
A few minutes ago, you talked about recruiting prospective student athletes that would fit your culture, your philosophy. Give us kind of an elevator pitch on what you want your culture to be, and what is your philosophy that you expect from your players and what you want your team to represent.
Be great people. At the end of the day, I'm going to give you the best opportunity on the field. You got to meet me halfway. You're going to have a good experience. I'm going to give you every opportunity that you would have at a Division I school in terms of travel, jerseys, you name it. We're going to do the best that we can. I'm looking for hard-nosed guys that want to be successful on the field and ultimately get a great degree. You're here to be a student first. So we always, you know, it's always classes, get the degree, be successful in the classroom, and then family, and then soccer. So that's kind of a little pitch there.
What's the key to building that culture other than recruiting prospective student athletes that you think will fit that? Once they get here, is there something that you do in order to mold them into that player and that person at some point? Because at the end of the day, I think what we're doing, what especially coaches are doing at the end of the day, is preparing students for real life in the workforce. And we do that through athletics. How do you mold now what would be a student for you into fitting that culture and seeing your philosophy and doing things that philosophically you want your program to do?
I think it starts with the seniors. We've had a good little senior group, like captains that kind of take the young guys right away under their belt. I try to get them involved in our SAC student athletic advisory committee right away. So I'll take one of our seniors or juniors that's in it. We immediately try to get like a freshman so they kind of see the whole school approach of Penn College and what we're trying to do in athletics. But then usually that gravitates to our team and the seniors being able to sort of take them under their wing and show them, hey, this is how, you know, we come to practice early. We get warmed up early. Coach walks on the field. We're ready to go. So we don't have guys just sitting around in the classroom. You know, they're kind of showing them our study hall policy. And, you know, you have 2 hours a week of study hall. You have progress reports that you take to your professors every 2 weeks. They show them that sort of route so then they can show all the freshmen, like, hey, this is what we got to do to be eligible. And then I think leaders, like on the playing field, seniors are always the big leaders that get the young guys comfortable right away. They don't really like silo them or anything like that. I haven't had issues with, you know, there being cliques. It sort of seems like the seniors, upperclassmen immediately are just bringing in the young guys right away. And we had 11 seniors this year, which doesn't really happen a lot in college athletics. That's a huge, huge class. And I think it's because they all sort of bought into the seniors when they were freshmen, they bought into the seniors and the culture and what we were trying to do. And they're just replicating it now.
Yeah, I think that's nice, you know, 10 years into it that, you know, it's really operated. It's player-led at this point. What point in the 10 years were you at the point that your philosophy and culture was at a level in which you could cut it loose and trust that your upperclassmen were going to do the right things and be an extension of you as a head coach?
It's kind of a two-part answer. So 2018, 2019, I felt like that was when I could just be hands-off, like, had a good group of seniors, had a good captains. I don't have a lot of rules. I don't have a lot of, like I said, be a good person at the end of the day. I felt like at 2018, 19, we were in a really good spot.
What guys are we talking about? Just
Chris McFarland, okay. Greg Dorsch, yep. LeMays, those type of guys. Just great, great players, good in the classroom, just good, outstanding people. And then it was weird. COVID kind of hit and we missed a whole year. So we lost we weren't together as much. We weren't allowed to, you know, to meet, have practices. So I think a little bit of that culture kind of went away. And then I would say in the last year and a half or so is where we really got it to a great point right now. Tommy DeGuyter has been our 3-year captain. He'll be finishing up this year, this spring. So he's a lead by example type of guy, not a huge rah-rah in your face guy. Like, you can't rile him up. He is just always cool, calm, collected, which probably helps me because on the field I'm a different animal in terms of coaching, but he is always
a little fiery,
a little bit at times. But I feel like he's really got us to a really good point, and moving forward we have some really good leaders that I'm excited for.
You talked about COVID kind of putting a pause a little bit on their growth. What was that shift like? How did you get it back on track to where it is now?
I think winning helped a little bit. We had a couple down years. We lost some guys that stepped away last minute. So we had positions recruited and we lost a couple defenders that had started previous years. And then right before we started our 2021 season, a couple guys left. They just kind of lost the passion to play, the desire to play. Missing that whole year was tough. They just wanted to focus on school and kind of get out. So after that, I would say is when we sort of like turned the page. Like, and then this year, winning 11 games, the most we have in program history. Guys just bought into everything we asked them to do. Like I said, we don't ask a lot. We don't have many. We have like no rules. It's just, like I said, be a good person. Represent yourself on and off the field as best as you possibly can. At the end of the day, you're not just Matt Blymire, the student. You're Matt Blymire, the men's soccer player. So you always have a different light on you. But yeah, I think it was the recruiting class. We got some really good top level players who were able to sort of blend in with our senior group. And it was a really fun year in fall of 2024.
Let's go maybe back a little bit, or maybe it's happened recently. I assume it was year one or year two. When did you have your welcome to head coaching moment where you're like, ooh, I've been expecting this. This is my responsibility.
Yeah, I honestly wasn't expecting this question. I would have to say it was probably the first game we played Central Penn at home.
You won the game, right?
We did. I started out 2-0. We could have just retired undefeated right then and there.
Yeah, that's when we had the we still had the grass field. We had no press box. We had the pop up tent on the other side of the field, and we were using an iPod through computer speakers to play our music.
It was quite the.
It was a little bit different.
Yeah. Benches on the side next to the fans. Yeah, yeah. So half the time, you know, I'm trying to watch the game and I got guys behind me talking with fans. And yeah, so that was interesting. But anyways, yeah, NCAA requires you to fill out like a roster sheet where you list the starters and everything like that. And when I was at Wilkes as the assistant, my job was to go through, you know, make sure the head coach had crossed out the right names or circled the guys that were playing. On that list, you have yellow cards, so you have to put how many yellow cards each guy has. Obviously, first game of the year, we didn't have to do that, but I was just like sitting there, probably on the bench. I mean, it was 10 years ago, so I can't totally recall, but just like circling names and being like, wow, like this is my team now. Like, I'm actually a head coach. So I would say that was probably like the first, holy cow, here I am.
Yeah.
This is my first game. Like, wins and loss. Now I have a record as an assistant coach. The win or loss went on the head coach. Now it's like I'm starting out with the fresh slate. Started 2-0. Could have retired undefeated.
Favorite game? Do you have a favorite game in the last 10 years as a head coach?
Can I have two?
Let me check with the judges. We'll allow.
I got two and two only. Two and two only. Okay.
I think I know the one.
I think my favorite game. I believe you actually went to up in Cuca.
Yeah.
It was the first time in NCAA program history that we made the playoffs. So it was in the NEAC, as we used to say. So yeah, we went up to Cuca. We were, I think, the 6 seed playing the 3 seed. I don't remember maybe the 7 seed playing the 2. I can't recall the actual seedings.
We're definitely under seed because we're on the road.
Yeah, we were on the road. So we're underdogs. And we kind of went into the game with, we're just going to go out and play hard. We have nothing to lose. Nobody expected us to be in the playoffs from the get-go. Coming off of 2 losing seasons, not even coming close to making playoffs. So we went in there with a mentality of, let's just go out. This could be our last game. Go play as hard as we can.
Was that the game? Was it Jerry that tied it 1-1?
Yeah.
This shot from, I don't know, midfield? Describe that. And maybe you were going there, so I'm sorry I interrupted, but I was just, because we just saw Jerry this weekend. Yeah. So tell us about how that game unfolded, because it was statistically an upset when you look at the seeds. But the way in which we did it was super fun from a fan's perspective, which is what I was at that point. I'm sure it was a little bit different from your perspective on the field because you were there's a little angst in you that night.
Yeah, so we are actually up 1-0. We took the early lead, and then second half, they tied it up early and then got a second to make it 2-1. So we were kind of, you know, heads were starting to go a little bit, you know, starting to foul a little bit, which happens when you're down a goal because you're pressing, you're trying to make, you know, things happen. And we got a set piece really late, and Chris McFarland, it was probably about 25 yards out, and Chris McFarland stood on the ball. He was our best free kick taker. And we had a couple set pieces that we've worked on in practice, but usually I just trust him. I could say, hey, if you're in shooting distance and you could put it on target, make the keeper make a save, go ahead, do that. I thought for sure he was shooting. He had the near post was open. The goalie was off to his right. So the whole left side was open. And I thought he had the ability to curl it over the wall. And I thought he could score. He chose to, out of nowhere, play to Jerry Lua, who was our defensive center mid. So he plays right in front of our 2 center backs, the back line, who they somehow made contact, eye contact. We talked about it this weekend at the alumni game. We never practiced this. It was not in the repertoire. At no point in 3 years did we ever run this set piece. It was just Chris, he's such a good player. He had this ability to sense that, hey, Jerry's to my left. Nobody's on him. Nobody's expecting this. I'm just going to play him a pass. Jerry took a one-time shot. I'll say it was probably 99 times going over the goal out of 100, but it went in, and that's all that matters.
How far out was it?
Probably 25 to 30 yards out. Like, and it was a rip. It wasn't just a little lollipop. I mean, he smoked it. Like I said, it probably go. We call it bears when you shoot over the goal. We call it hitting it into the bears. I thought, oh, this is going into the bears. Nope. It knuckled, went right into the goal, tied it with probably 3 minutes left in the game. Then we went to overtime. Double overtime, nobody scored, and then it went to penalty kicks, and we ended up winning 7th penalty kick. And I'm superstitious. I refuse to watch penalty kicks. So I had my back turned to the goal, or turned to the field the entire PK shootout.
It went to seven.
It went to seven.
Was it Jerry that?
Jerry had Jerry the game winner seven, as well. So.
Yep. I remember that.
That's definitely the number one game. Number two, we'll keep it quick and short, but it's probably Morrisville State the next year, I believe. Hunter Gosnell, our goalkeeper, made four penalty kick saves. One in double overtime to save us. Overtime is a sudden victory. So if he conceded the penalty kick, we were done. But he made the save, and then he made three saves in the penalty kick shootout, which is unheard of in soccer. Yeah, four penalty kicks.
Hunter was your PK king.
His coach, I never saw him play when I recruited him. His coach sent me an email and said he is the best penalty kick shot stopper you will ever see. And I think he was 6 for 6 or 7 for 7 in career PKs. So I wish I had that on video because we should have sent the ESPN top 10.
We could have.
We could have.
For sure.
Yeah. Looking back.
Apologies. So we talked about favorite games. Favorite moment of your coaching career. When we talk to student athletes about this, when we do certain things, moments for sake of this question isn't necessarily games. It could be bus trips, stuff that happened in hotels, stuff that happened because you spend so much time with these guys. I mean, you're on buses for hours. You're in hotel rooms. Is there a moment? And it could also be, you know, the alumni games when they come back. You just had your alumni game last weekend. You had more than 30 people back. It's so neat seeing these, which were then kids or now adults with families. Is there a moment for you that's your favorite of your career?
I think, you know, seeing them walk across stage, getting their diploma, graduation is always, that's always going to be number one because that's what they're here for, to get a degree, hopefully do it in 4 years. So I'd say that would be what I'm most proud of, to kind of see them walking across stage, shaking the president's hand, getting the diploma. And then aside from that, I would say the alumni game, honestly, it's just to have 30 some guys show up for a relatively new, you know, NCAA era program is pretty remarkable. Misericordia has a huge following. And, you know, I would go back to our game and 30 to 35 was like the max. And that was with a program that had been established for 25 years. So I think it's pretty cool to see, you know, Coach Enrique still lives in the area. And he had, you know, a lot of his guys come back. But we've been able to kind of grow together. Say, you know, it wasn't easy in the beginning, the PSUAC days and then trying to go NCAA. But I feel like between him and I and, you know, being able to communicate and talk about the programs and what he experienced and what I experienced, seeing the alumni, like it was incredible this weekend with the 30 guys. Like it doesn't happen often.
Yeah, I think what was neat about that too, from my vantage point, was that a lot of your guys, for this sake, guys that you coached, you're still in routine contact with them. So there was a little bit catching up, but not much because there's still that relationship that you guys maintain. And it's, you know, it's a two-way thing and it's initiated by them. How does that feel? It wasn't like these long lost kids. You guys were just kind of, maybe it's been a couple weeks or a few months where you haven't spoken to them, but most of them you had spoken to or at some point communicated to within the last 6 months.
Yeah. I should do better. I try to stay in touch with guys, you know, as much as I can every few months, just send a text. Hey, how's it going? Like, how's the job? Anything new type of thing. But yeah, it was fun. Like I got a couple guys that said, hey, can we schedule golf? Like, let's go play golf in the morning. So we had about eight guys that went and played golf and it was just kind of on a whim.
Was there supposed to be nine?
You were kind of invited, but next time we'll make sure you're there.
I was told that I was invited and you were supposed to tell me and you.
You had lacrosse, so I figured you wouldn't be there in time. So okay. I apologize. And it was raining.
That's true. I don't like the rain. So thank you then.
You're welcome.
All right. Two more questions for you. Prospective student athlete, a kid in high school right now, they want to become a collegiate soccer player in general, but specifically for Penn College. What advice do you have for them?
First, I would, you know, get in touch with me. Reach out through email, fill out our questionnaire. It's usually as soon as I get a questionnaire, I'll send an email and just say, hey, can you tell me a little bit about yourself? Academic focus obviously is number one for us, just with the niche type of majors we have. And then from there, it's, can you get me any film? Film is important. There's a lot of showcases that I try to get to, but I'm really only a, you know, one man show going to these tournaments. So I might go to a game for 20 minutes. You may play, you may not. So, you know, if you're able to get film, send that over to me. Any tournament schedules would be important to send as well.
How about, high school students that just play for their high school? Do you encourage them to seek out a club and play additional beyond their scholastic season?
I think it's important in soccer. I'm in a lot of other sports to try to go to the next, like, not that it's a higher level, but I feel like there's a little bit more of a commitment when you're, you know, you have a couple practice, extra practices a week, and you're playing full time. Like, you're playing all year round. I will say, though, on the same sense, if you play basketball and you play baseball or lacrosse, like, do those sports as well. I don't like to silo myself on just like a soccer player. I like multi-sport athletes. I feel like they can be really successful on the soccer field, reading a ball out of the air. Obviously, right, being able to play with your feet, bringing a trapping a ball. But if you are just high school, it is a little bit harder. It's a lot faster. Even guys that play some top level club, it takes them a while to get used to the college game. I always tell guys, and when we're talking recruits, you're 18 years old now playing maybe, you know, against some 18-year-olds, but there's 14, 15, 16-year-old, 17-year-old boys, right? And then when you're in college, you're 18. This year we played Karen in the quarterfinals. They had a 26-year-old center mid who was, he was a grown man. So the biggest change is, yeah, like, guys are, they're older, so they're faster, stronger, which I think the club level helps you a little bit more than like the high school.
Right. Okay. Other than PCTWildcats.com and PCT Athletics, where can fans of Penn College's men's soccer follow your journey on social media?
You can follow us on our Instagram page, PCTMSoccer, and PCTMSoccer on Twitter as well. I use Twitter a little bit, but Instagram's the main source of social media that we use.
All right. There you have it. Thank you so much, Tyler. Really appreciate your time. Thank you to those tuning in. Stay wild.
Thank you, Matt.